Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's here, too. She's a longtime member of our Brain Trust, a good friend of ours, and a steadfast supporter of all the things that you do, that's for sure, in her role as a senior editor at the Kiplinger Editors. And she's brought along the most recent Kiplinger letter with her today, and we're going to talk about the things that Kiplinger has to say about what's happening in the world as it impacts our small businesses. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Well, Joan, I'm looking at your global forecast a little table here, and since we're only a couple of weeks away from 09, mm-hmm. That's the column I'm looking at.
Right.
And I'm seeing a lot of negative.
A lot of minus signs.
Negative United States, negative 1.8 for next year. In GDP, we're talking about, obviously, GDP, folks, gross domestic product. And GDP for the U.S., 1.8 negative. Eurozone, negative 2. Japan, negative 2. U.K., negative 2. Canada, Mexico, both negative. China, which had been 9 or 10, now under 7. It's ugly ink for next year, isn't it?
I'm afraid so. No getting around that.
So, folks, this is what I've been saying. When I've been telling you that we need to continue to gird our loins and be and focus on the fundamentals, it's as you guys point out, Joan. We truly are in what I think we could call a global recession.
Yeah, I think there's no question. I think few people would argue with that.
Yeah, and folks, that's a technical term. And I keep pointing, Joan, I keep pointing this out, that this is a technical term. And the reason I do that is because that doesn't mean that everybody is having a bad time. I mean, there are plenty of businesses in the United States, Joan, who are kind of doing okay.
Right, and I don't want to minimize the unemployment rate. It's high, and that's very important, and it's scary. But there's the vast majority of folks still have their jobs, and they're good jobs.
Well, and I think we still are looking at a record number of people with jobs.
Right, I think so. Yeah.
And so, there are a lot of positive things out there. But the other thing, Joan, that you guys report here as a second thought. On your front page of the Kiplinger letter, is this thing about trade and that trade is planning it's going to be shrinking, I should say, a pretty good bit worldwide. And tell us about that.
Right. Well, we say trade is going to shrink 2.1% worldwide, which kind of sounds like a lot to me. Now we're saying also that U.S. exports will drop by one half of one percentage point.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound like a lot. And one thing that's interesting to me is that in today's papers, everybody's talking about how the dollar has plummeted. And because I'm a currency expert, I can tell you that is good for our exports, actually.
Well, it is, because, in fact, our exports have been one of the saving graces of our economy for the last 4 or 5 years, hasn't it?
Right. Second only to the hard-charging consumer.
Yeah, who's now not feeling well.
Right.
And so not charging so hard. But no, seriously, the weak dollar has helped our exports.
Right.
It hasn't been good if you wanted to travel abroad, but if you were exporting, it gave you a competitive advantage. And of course, the dollar has declined again, as you say. But one of the things that I thought is interesting, though, is your report here, Joan, about how this contraction by the U.S. exports is actually the first decline since the recession of 1982.
Gosh,
so
that was
a number that surprised me.
Yeah, over 25 years ago.
Right, right. Now, and another thing that we talked about, the Chinese contraction.
Right.
You know, even though they're going from like 9.5 or 10% growth to 6.9%, even though that's not technically a recession, for those guys, it's got to feel like that, hasn't it?
Yeah, we're saying that they're going to grow by 6.9%, which to me sounds like an overheated economy.
It is, for us.
The line that jumps out at me here is that we say that in China, growth below 8% will mean untenable unemployment.
Right. Yeah, that's and you know, Joan, that's in a country like that, that could create a lot of ugly scenarios.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, not only human suffering, but maybe even some kind of political instability. What do you think?
I think it's very possible. That's true. And you have that sort of the dichotomy also between rural and urban in China that also creates unrest, too.
I read, I guess, in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that China has started blocking some websites and some information online that they had released and allowed to come through during the period of the Olympics, but they've now started blocking that again. I wonder if they will keep doing that as their economy, you know, sort of becomes not as robust as it was, and they have these kind of challenges. It'll be interesting to see how they repress freedom of speech and that sort of thing over there.
Well, I think they will, sure. They'll do anything they can.
Yep. And, of course, you guys point out that the risk of global deflation is growing. You know, Joan, we sit here saying, and I've reported this week with some economists on my show about inflation not being a problem and how what a good thing that is. I mean, Joan, think of what would be going on right now in our world if we had, like, you know, even 5% inflation and oil prices were up, you know, above $100 a barrel, we'd be in some big trouble right now. So oil prices are low. Inflation is way down to almost nothing. You guys are saying we could be entering a deflationary period.
No pleasing us, is there?
Well, I know, but I mean,
either way.
But my point is things could be. We're excited about there not being any inflation, really, any dangers, but that means that we're also very near to deflationary period.
Well, that's true. I think a lot of other things would have to happen before you have true deflation. I guess I'm still, you know, I was so scarred by growing up during stagflation times that I'm real happy that we're not seeing inflation overheat, because the Fed really had a rough time when you had a slow economy and
right.
High inflation. Its tools weren't as sharp as
you just can't get off that stagflation.
It really
marked you, didn't it?
I need therapy.
We've known that for a long time, Joan. Stand by. Quick break, 20 after. Joan Pride and I will be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame. Here's Carlos Santana to take us out.
Got a black magic woman.
Little Heart bringing us back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's the flagship, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And then, of course, our knowledge base where you get small business answers right now, askjim.biz. And then, of course, my blog, which is jimsblog.biz. I hope you'll check those out. I post to my blog regularly every week, most days. Occasionally, I just get so busy and I don't get to do it, but then the next day I come back and I make up for it. So I hope you check that out, jimsblog.biz. But if you just remember the flagship, the mothership site, smallbusinessadvocate.com, you can get to the blog there, you can get to the knowledge base, you can listen to the archives of past interviews, whatever topic's on your mind, whatever you're trying to accomplish. We've got an article or an archive of an interview that I've done with some expert somewhere there, and you can find it easily. We've made it the new site. Makes it easy to do that. And whatever you do, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And by the way, we have something called a briefcase on the site. So if you find something on our site that you like, you can actually mark it and put it in your briefcase. It's all free, by the way. You can put it in your briefcase and come back and find it again. So check that out and use those tools to your advantage. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we were down to the part about global deflation. And that you guys say is the potential is growing, the risk is growing. Deflation is uglier than inflation, isn't it?
Well, yes. If you have true deflation, it is very ugly.
Because,
and that's what we had in the Depression, right?
Right, right. Because you can't stop. There are virtually no tools to use to stop deflation. It's very difficult to stop it. Whereas inflation, you can put a lid on inflation.
Right. You can influence people's behavior on inflation.
Right.
With deflation, I don't know how you do it, because I would think with deflation, the tendency by people is to hang back and not buy things.
Right. That's right.
I don't know how you make them buy things. I guess you put money in their hands. Maybe you have to print money.
Well, it's that. But with value, with prices going down and down, it's easier to put a lid on inflation than it is to put a floor under deflation.
And we've only had true deflation once, at least in the United States, right?
I think so. Now, they had it in Japan, I think, in the 90s,
but when it hits, it
apparently lasts. I don't know.
Right.
I don't think we want to go messing with that. You know, this is, but we like low inflation. But see, Joni, this is like when I talk to small business owners about trying things that are cutting edge stuff, and I say, you know, be careful when you get out on the leading edge. There's a lot of opportunity to be found on the leading edge, but remember what's very, very near to the, in fact, what is on the other side of the leading edge is the bleeding edge. And so we might like low inflation. We might like 0.05% inflation, but that's only a half a point away from deflation.
Right, that's right.
So we got to be careful about that. And one of the things, Joan, that you guys also report on, and I'm glad you did this week, is the increased risk also of protectionism. This is a global phenomenon. This is a phenomenon that can happen globally, and it's what happened in the 30s, Joan, that really was the main cause of the Great Depression.
In fact, we say imports are often a scapegoat in harsh economic times,
yep.
And that's
mm-hmm.
when countries put up trade barriers. Now, there are legal limits to those trade barriers that are maintained by the World Trade Organization, but I think they could still be harmful nonetheless.
Right, exactly. And Joan, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1932 or 3, I've forgotten the year, that was the one policy change that really was a huge part of the reason why when we put that tariff up, that caused other countries to react in the same way. And
right.
that really exacerbated the depression. And we've got to avoid that. And I really am going to be watching the Obama administration to see what their actions are with regard to trade, because there are some elements of that administration that are more protectionist than I would like for them to be. So we're going to have to be watching out for that.
Right.
Joan, another thing you guys talk about is about the interest in the United, in other countries, I should say, foreigners, to buy our debt. That's still people still want to put their money in dollars, don't they?
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
And we even say that investors are accepting rates near zero. You would think that they wouldn't, but that's how attractive U.S. debt is.
Right. Here are some areas that you guys talk about that you say are should be able to weather the storm pretty well, and you point out health, the health industry. I mean, Joan, we're my generation is getting older, and there's a bunch of us, so there's going to be a lot of demand for medical, right?
Well, no question about it. That's true. Yeah.
Farm goods. You think that they're going to do okay in this. And construction,
right.
Of course, if Mr. Obama does his infrastructure thing, that's going to be good for the construction industry, right?
Right, right. But look at the other category.
Hold on, before you get there, though, Joan,
okay.
I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
We'll talk about that one on the other side of the break. Mr. Obama is saying he's going to start this big infrastructure program to put people back to work.
Right.
Joan, of the people that you know who are laid off, how many of them are capable of working on a construction site?
Well, I don't travel in those circles.
Yeah, that's my point.
I'm sure there are plenty.
No, they're not, Joan.
Really?
No.
How do you know?
If you got, I know these people. I get outside the Beltway. I'm unlike you. I get outside the Beltway. Stand by. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She and I will be right back after these messages. Stay with us.
He He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging out with us. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, Joan, one of the areas that you guys point out that will be weathering the storm, and I guess you mean is what they'll be able to weather is the exporting problem, because you say small businesses will weather this storm pretty good because of the low number that actually export. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we say roughly 25 million U.S. small businesses, only 240,000 export, a far lower percentage than in the rest of the world.
So from a trade standpoint, because with trade being off, the point you're making is that that's going to have a less of an impact on small businesses. But, you know, interestingly, Joan, the 240,000 exporters, small business exporters, still makes up a huge majority of the total exporters in America. That's an interesting number there.
Well, that's a good point,
yeah. It's like 90-something, like 92% of all exporters in America are small business owners. And I think the volume of, I don't remember the exact number, Joan, but I think the percentage of exporting volume by small business owners is something like 25 to 30% or something like that.
Gee.
It's a pretty good number.
Yeah.
And more and more every day. I've been talking to small business owners for years about getting them to focus on exporting. But it's going to be interesting. One of the things I have said, Joan, and I've been saying for a long time, and I've said it today, is that small businesses in America will be the sector that will lead this economy out of whatever it's in right now.
That's right. Yes, you have said that many times.
I believe it
and
with
it
all my heart.
It makes perfect sense.
Well, of course, because we believe in ourselves.
Right.
You know, some groups, we've got, you know, the tail wagging the dog right now. They don't believe in anything. Small business owners, we believe in ourselves. We believe in Main Street. We believe in our economy. We believe in our customers and our employees. And we believe in our vision. And that's the kind of thing, Joan. That's between our ears, Joan.
Well, you guys have done a better job of staying lean and mean than some of the much larger, really huge companies that, you know, I'm thinking mainly now of the auto industry.
Right, yeah.
So that's a huge difference.
Well said. But you know, Joan, if you think about it, we got more problems with a lack of confidence and trust between our ears than we have with problems in front of us in on the ground. And that's the reason why I think small business owners are going to be so strong and so important, because we don't have that much of a lack of confidence. We believe in all this stuff.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that's going to happen. And the good news is there are 25 million of us, and that's something that we've got to realize that about ourselves and spread that information, spread that news. Joan, let's move over and talk about this rescue fund. The Treasury will soon ask for the other half of the $700 billion rescue fund, and you guys say it's a risky move. Now, why is that?
Well, we say on the one hand, Congress doesn't like the way the first half has been used, so it would like to hold off till Obama gets in office. But it's a risk to wait that long, because the markets could get very upset.
Every day.
Yeah,
is a momentous event
right.
in the marketplace, isn't it? Right now,
oh boy, I'll say I would not want to be a trader.
Yeah, I mean we still got a little over a month before Obama takes office, and there's a lot of stuff that could happen between. And for one thing, Joan, I mean think about this: Chrysler and General Motors could go in the tank in the next 30 days.
That's right,
conceivably.
Well. It sure looks that way.
That's a lot of destruction and mayhem could happen between now and then.
And I think that's what they're worried about. Sure.
Exactly. So, but you know what scares me even more though, Joan, is when I hear Speaker Pelosi acting like she's tinkering around with what to do about the automobile companies. that's the frightening thing for me. No, I'm sorry, Joan. I just couldn't resist that.
That's okay.
The
it's my letter, but it's your show.
Yeah, that's right. You guys believe that the Obama administration, though, will still have the final say on what to do with the other $350 billion in the TARP?
Right. Sure. Well, we kind of contradict ourselves because we say it will take almost until inauguration day to release the second $350 billion. I guess our point is that once it's released,
right,
you still have to figure out what to do with it.
Exactly. Exactly. We're gonna talk about if you're renting commercial space, folks, there may be some good news for you. Not if you're a landlord, but if you're a tenant. Might be some good news for you. We're going to report on that when we come back after these messages. We're going to have a little bit on taxes after these messages. We're going to talk about a number of other things when we come back. 20 till. Here is Lindsey Buckingham, TechSoc.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Little Platter's bringing us back there. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and their website is kiplinger.com. I hope you'll check that out and use it to your advantage. It's a good website. Lots of good stuff there, and their publications, which I also recommend to you, that I've been enjoying for many decades now, not all the way back to when they first started in 1923, but a while back. And that's the Kiplinger letter, which is what Joan and I work off of every week. And that's the weekly letter. That's the original. And then, of course, they've got biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, the accounting,
California.
The tax letter, the California letter, and the Joan, you're getting so many I can't remember.
Wait,
the biofuels.
The tax letter. The tax letter is a big one.
I said the tax letter.
Oh, I thought you said accounting.
There's the accounting letter, right?
The
tax letter, the California letter,
agriculture
letter,
and the biofuels.
So there are just four of those. Why did I think there were five? Where did I come up with five? I don't know how that.
I don't know.
Maybe I need to take some Ginkgo biloba or something. and then of course they got that. You got that magazine thing.
That's right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And that's available at newsstands. And what about a phone number?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Agriculture, tax, California, and biofuels. Those are the four biweeklies. All right.
Right.
I don't know why. You'd think I'd get that right after a while, wouldn't you? Joan, if you're a tenant and you're renting commercial space, this might be a good time for you to renegotiate. What do you think?
Boy, I'll say. Definitely.
You guys are saying there's going to be a lot of vacancies next year.
It's going to be an awful year for commercial real estate. Awful.
Mm-hmm. All these people being laid off, and now see, Joan, this comes back to my point about the construction thing, about the infrastructure thing. People who work in commercial offices don't build roads and bridges, and so you guys are making my point here. If the commercial space is going to be empty because all these people are being laid off, then I don't know. Anyway, so never mind, folks. If you have a chance to rent, or if you have a chance to renegotiate your lease, or if you're negotiating it because it's renewing, don't be afraid to go to your landlord or your future landlord, potential landlord, and say, okay, I'm ready to negotiate. See what they offer you.
Right.
And might be some good opportunities there. And boy, howdy, if it would be awfully handy for a lot of companies, Joan. We're all looking for opportunities to cut costs. Let's move down and talk about taxes. Joan, you want to talk about taxes?
Oh, I will, but you're going to need another hour because I'm not going to get off my soapbox for this one.
Imagine that.
If you reach 70 and a half, and I know you're light years away from that.
Many light
years. And you have an IRA or a company plan or a 401k, you have to take what they call minimum distributions, and you have to calculate it based on the value of the account the prior December 31st. Which means anybody taking one of those distributions in 2008 is calculating based on the value of their account December 31st, 2007.
Mackerel.
Exactly. Holy mackerel is right.
When your value of your account has been cut by 40%.
So number one, you're going to have to take a payout that's really too high. And number two, you're going to have to liquidate. If you have stocks in that account, you're going to have to liquidate devalued stocks to do it.
Wow.
So people have been saying maybe that somebody, you know, Treasury should say waive the requirement for 2008. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Congress waived the requirement for 2009, which is great for next year, but it doesn't do anybody any good for this year.
Wow.
And Treasury had kind of hinted that they might make some kind of announcement about this. And what's today?
Today's the night, what, the 19th? Or?
Yeah, it's the 18th of December,
18th,
and
yeah.
The people have to take that distribution by December 31st. So if Treasury's going to tell them something, they need to be telling
you
them
think
now.
They're going to do that? You think they're going to try to make that? I mean, who knows about 2009? We might not even be here in 2009.
Well,
so they need to they need to do that for 2008, don't they?
Right, exactly. And I'm just frustrated.
That's a double whammy on these folks, isn't it?
Right. And Treasury is just sitting back. Even if they're going to say we're not doing anything, they need to tell us what their decision is. Because
and they're going to have to pay taxes on it to boot, aren't they?
Right. That's right.
Wow. That's double jeopardy. Wow. Maybe triple jeopardy.
And, you know, Congress could have taken care of this by including 2008 in the legislation it passed, but it didn't do that.
This reminds me of the mark-to-market rule, Joan, that they didn't do away with or didn't suspend when they made all these banks mark their securities to the market when there was no market for it.
Right.
Temporarily, there's no market for it, and so they had to mark it down to virtually nothing, and that's how these companies got into so much trouble.
Exactly.
And so there's got to be some kind of an elastic buffer or some kind when we have these kinds of changes in the economy, some way to so that the rules that are so rigid don't hurt us.
Exactly.
And that's what you're talking about. So
right.
Well, thanks
and
for that information, folks. If you're in that category, you're gotta take that mandatory payout. Or if you know somebody who is, you know, this might be a good time to be calling your member of Congress. I don't know. What could they do, Joan, between now and the end of the year?
Well, they could pass legislation saying that anybody who took a distribution could recontribute it. That's how they could kind of unwind it,
right,
to kind of make you whole.
But would that not create a phantom income taxable event?
Well, they could always, but they could waive that too.
Yeah.
They can do whatever they want.
And it won't do any good if Obama nullifies that retroactively if you've already taken the money out. And you've traded the stock, and you know that die is cast.
Yes, but I'm saying that the Congress and Obama could next year let people put the money back in.
Yeah.
And waive any tax or penalty.
But Joan, if they've sold the stock to do this, they've already that transaction's happened.
Right.
They've already lost that whatever opportunity that could have had. Anyway, it's a mess. It's a mess, folks. I love our government. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back. A little bit of Stones bringing us back. Mr. Jagger on vocals. 7 till, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're rocking and rolling with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, over on page three, you guys talk about internet service going up. And you point out that we're going to be paying a little more for connecting to the internet in the future. What do you think
That's
about
right.
that?
Well, I guess I'm not surprised that this is happening, but of course it's never a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't. And of course, you're saying maybe as much as 10% to 15%.
Right.
There are a couple of issues here, Joan. One is the natural cost of doing business, the increased cost of doing business that we all have to have price increases for that sort of thing. But there are a couple of other things that are going on right now, Joan, with regard to this, and one of them is the net neutrality debate, which is a very complicated thing that I'm not going to get into a lot right now. But this is where people who are the big companies get themselves a preferential access to the internet that little guys like me don't have.
Uh-huh.
And so that's going to be something for folks to watch out for when we're talking about, you know, how much should we pay for access to the internet? Right now, your report there is basically on just everybody getting on the internet and having doing whatever they want to do on the internet.
Right.
The next big debate, it's not the next one, it's actually a debate going on right now, but the debate that's going to, this shoe is going to drop in the next year or so, maybe this next year, is this net neutrality thing. And that's where companies like Google and Microsoft and Comcast actually are able to negotiate preferential treatment for themselves online. And so they're, see, I have a media company.
Right.
Kiplinger has a website.
That's right.
And you're a media company in a way.
Yes.
And the only reason I said in a way is because you don't have audio. Most of it's print. But anyway, my point is, if you and I are as big as Google and Microsoft, so we don't have the same access to the bandwidth as they do.
That's true.
So that's something, just folks. It's an unbelievably complicated scenario, Joan. I've covered it a bunch of times. I've talked about it a bunch of times. It's still complicated to me. And I've talked to a bunch of experts about this. But I'm warning folks right now: you're going to want to weigh in on this debate. And it's been out there. It's been shelved a little bit, but look for it to rear its head. Probably in 2009, and you guys will be reporting on it, John. I promise you, within 6 months, you'll report on this. Let's move over and talk about this. Is good news to me, John. This airline thing, with the Wi-Fi thing from the airlines. I like that idea. Tell us about that.
Oh, about more airlines offering Wi-Fi?
Yeah,
it's a way to bolster sagging revenue, we say. So American Airlines is letting people go online with their laptops and BlackBerries and smartphones, and they charge $12.95. I think a lot of people would pay that.
I would.
Yeah.
I would. I've been, and so basically the airplane becomes a router. Is that what we're talking about here?
I guess so. I mean, you know more about it than I do.
Well, yeah, you just plug in and I don't know if you're going to be able to use a 3G card. I thought they'd maybe let you use a 3G card, but I guess maybe you just use a regular wireless router. So, no, you're on an airplane for 2 hours. You can't check your email. You can't do any work. I mean, here's the other thing, Joan. You could buy stuff while you're on the airplane. I think that's a bet they've been missing.
Oh, yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah, right.
You look at the catalog, but you can't. You have to remember to buy it when you leave. The $12.95, Joan, will be a drop in the bucket compared to the commissions that they could get from people being able to buy stuff.
I have to say, how many times have you sat on a plane and looked at that catalog and said, you know, I'd buy that, but
exactly.
You can't at that moment.
I rest my case.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Joan, also the airlines, are going to have a tough year from a labor negotiation standpoint.
Yeah, there's a lot of contracts up for renewal, so just be prepared. And we'll be reporting on whether if we think strikes are coming up, and we don't say that yet. But
yeah.
I think it's important just to watch for that, and just in case you have travel plans.
Let me give you one example. I was just on a Delta flight a couple of weeks ago, talking to some of the stewardesses,
flight attendants,
I should say. Sorry about that.
Flight attendants.
I knew that. And so a couple of ladies there and on the plane, and Delta Airline, Delta is now merging with Northwest. The Northwest flight attendants are union. The Delta flight attendants are not.
Oh.
So how are you going to put that fish and fowl together? That's going to be interesting to watch, Joan, is how they combine those two. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today. You won't be here next week, so Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you, Jim.
We'll see you in the new year.
Yes.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, but I will be here on Christmas Day and tomorrow, too.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.